It looks like you are filleting some form of fucking thing that's fucking looks like a side of a computer or something.
Salmon, right, Andy.
I walked in on something there, didn't I?
The following podcast contains three mates talking shit over some beers. As you can imagine, the language can get a wee bit hairy from time to time. So, get involved. Grab a beer and join us for Drunk Therapy, the podcast.
Andy's here. Andy, how you doing for the staying in?
I'm good. Sorry I'm late. The first time I'd seen my mum in 12 weeks and I had to take her back home.
Did you find conversation... Look, I met my mum for the first time last week. Don't get me wrong, like, I've had to speak to her on the phone. It's been a fucking mission, man. It's been difficult. Speaking to her, that is not seeing her. There's no chat beyond what you've been up to. Fuck all, just sitting in the house.
Well, it was all right, because like, I've got three young kids, so they filled the time. They filled the time. But it was all right. I mean, I've actually been fairly busy, so I've been able to fill her in on some shit.
Yeah, you've been like one of the few people I'd let. Maybe doctors have been slightly busier, but beyond doctors, not even nurses, just doctors.
Aye.
You've like found a fucking niche. You've found like an entrepreneurial career out of this whole thing so far.
It's been kind of mad. It's been a strange old time.
Well, Andy, tell us about that then, because you know, you're a guy that we had no idea of like 12 weeks ago, and you filled the void for a lot of people by setting up a virtual pub called The Staying In, which has just kind of been, you know, lit on fire. It's got a whole community now, 10,000 followers on Facebook.
Yeah.
People, you know, obsessing over when you're starting the next quiz or bringing the next dating show in. So you kind of want to wind us back a wee bit then?
So I work in the live music industry. I feel that we locked down quicker than everybody else because all these big, large gatherings canned more quicker than everyone. So it was about 12th of March, actually. That was my last gig. So it was maybe a couple of days after that. And I was like, something's not right here. So we were looking, some of the other stuff I do, I do loads of events. One of the events I had was a community awards. So I was like, right, this is going to be cancelled. It was supposed to be like a big flashy community awards in a hotel, a couple of hundred people sit down for dinner. So I was like, this is going to be cancelled. We need to look at how we're going to do this. We still need to get the awards out. Yes, we're not going to get everybody in the same room, but we need to consider how we're going to do this. So I was like, let's live stream it. I've got a nice big office at home. I'll live stream it for here. I'll put a shirt and tie on and stand beside my telly and I'll have it still up on the screen. Like, I had a wee presentation for them and all. So I was like, I need to test it. I need to make sure everything's going to work okay. I was like, fuck it, I'll host a pub quiz. So on my own personal Facebook page, I was like, I'm going to host a pub quiz. Stuck it up. I said that afternoon. I said, I'm going to host a pub quiz this afternoon. If anybody wants to join, I'm going about 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock rolls around, I stick a pub quiz up. And I don't have many friends on Facebook, not because I'm not superly popular, but just because I like to keep a wee tight-knit circle. But with over 100 teams like just joined into that first one. And it was just
so was this like the first week of lockdown then?
Lockdown hadn't even officially kicked in. So lockdown officially kicked in 23rd, because it was 21st was the day that I held the first pub quiz. We kind of held it and it was a bit of a laugh, and then Glasgow Live ran a story on it the next day. I was like, fuck, I better do that again. I used to host pub quizzes like in actual pubs, remember them? Like years ago when I was a student and DJing and stuff like that. So I mean, it was something that came naturally and something that I had all the quizzes there. So I was like, I'll just do a couple more of them. Because I do a lot of work with DF concerts and live music, I said to them, look, do you want me to host what? I'll do one on your platform. Because let's face it, right now, you've got absolutely nothing going on. There's like all the gigs are being postponed. Let's fill the void a wee bit. So that's kind of where the new pub quiz started, and every Thursday we were doing it on there. So very quickly, I think I'd only done the second quiz and the one show got in touch. Well, we want you to come on the one show. And I was like, all right. So I went on the one show and did a fucking mini pub quiz for Al Murray, Ed Balls, and the two presenters from the one show. I don't watch telly.
Alex Jones. You said that a wee bit relaxed, mate, actually. All right, I'll just go live on BBC One in front of the full of the UK, you know, virtually from my room, and I'll do a pub quiz, you know.
Aye. It was mental, but it was just, it all happened so quickly. So, I mean, it was literally just like this. It was on a wee Skype call, and like, but instead of them, I'm just standing there waiting for half an hour until they come to me near the end of the show.
What are you doing? Are you just sitting and forgive my, you know, my mind here, but were you just like scratching your balls and fucking checking your watch?
I was, because it, when I used to do the pub quiz, he's so like, I've now got this big black backdrop up behind me, but behind me is a big telly, and I had this plastic lectern. So I was standing at that with my laptop, so my laptop stood on that.
Were you wearing a suit jacket?
A sparkly jacket, no. Glittery thing.
So I was just standing for the whole show waiting on it, but I had my earpiece in as normal, just like, so I'm hearing everything that's happening on the show, like the director's chat, and then they're saying every so often, Andy, right, we're coming to you soon, we're coming to you, and I'm just standing there waiting on it happening, and then they come to me and say, go. I'm like, and then asked three questions or something, and that was it.
Were you speaking yourself a wee bit? Nah,
not really, to be honest. It didn't feel, it was fine. Like the job I do is like high pressure, so I don't mind working under pressure. There's nothing to it, and fuck it, I was in my office. I was literally in this is my loft, so there's nothing weird about it. But I was smart about it. So like on my TV screen that I had beside me, I'd made like this background that just had at the staying in on it. So like as soon as I was off the telly, my Instagram and my Facebook just blew up. It like went mental, and that, in all honesty, going on the one show was what forced me to get that together. I was like, let's just put a platform for this. I'm not going to host these quizzes on my own Facebook, because that's just going to, I'm just going to get so many weirdos trying to add me on Facebook, and I didn't want that. So I just set up another platform.
Have you had that since? I'm sure we'll get into the reasons why.
Aye, hundreds.
How many sitting there right now and your friend requests?
I couldn't even begin to answer that question. But my mum's even became a big part of it. My mum has, there's a couple of people who have been following the quizzes, have set up the Nand and Lock fan club, and they've made badges and everything, like actual physical badges for the Nand and Lock fan club. But my mum's never appeared on screen and that. She's like this mythical figure. But folk are like, they've taken it next level.
That's a moment where you do consider pressing the exit button on the whole thing.
I just thought it would have been like, because there's like a community page now. See, there's I don't know, would you call it like a fan page for this thing?
See, the weird thing was like when I started this, so as soon as I did the first one on my own Facebook page, immediately I had people, and obviously these were people I knew, they were friends, they were sending me messages like, mate, thank you, I needed that. Like, I've just spent all day. So one of my friends, a wedding photographer, he's like, I've just spent all day phoning brides and telling them their weddings are can't do their job, or their weddings have been cancelled, so I've lost work. So I needed that wee bit of fucking happiness in the world to forget that I've done it. And then every time I'd done a quiz, it became really, really apparent that actually it was a bit of an escape for everything. It was an escape for me as well, because fuck, I'd lost loads of work as well. I could see everything coming, the dominoes were falling on all the events. I was due to the busiest summer that I ever had this summer, and it all just disappeared. So, I mean, don't get me wrong, a lot of it's just shifted into next summer, but it's still been a bit of a boot in the balls. But then seeing the kind of the effect it was having on people, and seeing people are like, oh, thank you, I needed that, thank you, I'm shielding alone, I'm like, I've not been able to leave the house in however many weeks, I've not seen anybody, this is my social life. And I was like, I need to do something a wee bit different here. So continued to do more events, and then that was where the community page came out of it. People were, you could see people were making friends, were making connections, and I was like, okay, just let's give them a place to do that. And that's where it's been. I mean, the people in that community page are like hosting nightly Zoom calls, and there's like 30 people going on there just talking shite until like four, very much like this, until like 4 in the morning. But just
thanks, mate.
You know it so well, so quickly.
They've made connections, they've made friends. I mean, it's been kind of cool to see.
Well, there's a lot to be said, because obviously you and we'll go into this in a wee second, but you ran the Zoom to Groom on a Saturday night, and that to me, and I know Danny as well, whether he was getting involved or not, it was something to look forward to that day. You know, it breaks up your day. You go, for me, my Saturdays were cleaning, getting the weekly shop, having a few beers with the missus, and sitting in like the back garden if it was sunny. And then I knew I had something to look forward to that night, because I didn't want to go to bed at like 9 or 10. You know, I wanted to stay up on a Saturday night. And there's a lot to be said about that appointment to do something, you know, and you kind of created that where it wasn't going to be the case. And I think it's sort of gap in the market, but it's so important. And Zoom to Groom, obviously. Well, Danny, you can talk about your experiences in a second, but there was a guy in Zoom to Groom who was brilliant, the most eccentric guy in the world, and it was pure comedy when he came on. But there was a comment he made at the end of it, like the final night of Zoom to Groom.
Honestly, I was close to tears.
Yeah, and he turned around and he said, "You guys have given me my confidence back." And it was just like, wow, that's powerful, man. For a lot of people, this was just taking the piss and having a laugh and, you know, this pseudo love connection kind of thing. But for that guy, it was a place for him to come and gain confidence, which is fucking powerful, man.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's what I mean. Like a lot of what I've been sent messages in kind of confidence that were following the same line. And I was like, fuck, man, this isn't just me calling people assholes for posting answers in the comments in my Facebook feed. There was more to it. So it was interesting. And the whole thing about Zoom to Groom is seeing how many people get invested in the, I'll call them characters, but they're not characters, but people get invested in the people that were on that. They'd send me messages throughout the week like, oh fuck man, I hope we get such and such back on because I want to know what they're doing. It was a bit eye-opening. I've never been involved in TV, but to see how people really dug into that was mad. It was mad.
There was something about, sorry Shane, there was this podcast, we've been doing this for, I don't know, about a year and a half now, and it's fine, like, people listen and we have a laugh doing it, but I done Zoom to Groom, and then on the comments, on the last one before it stopped, somebody said, oh, I walked past Danny in Queen's Park the other day, and I was starstruck, and I'm going, nah, I'm wanting to fuck, like, that's not fair, that's not how this should be.
I went to Tesco, and I get recognised by the guy who came out with the Click and Collect, and he recognised me, I was like, this is fucking weird, man.
Yeah.
You started doing pub quizzes. What made you then decide to do something for people, I don't know, looking for love? Was it a take piss, or was it like people were asking for it?
It was looking for something different. Pub quizzes were going to get boring really, really quickly. People would always ask for different themes on pub quizzes, ask for different things. Karaoke was something we tried, but technically it's really, really difficult to do a virtual karaoke. And you're kind of relying on somebody else to have the technical know-how to do that at their end, which we can't do. We can't really, fuck's sake, they struggle with the fucking Facebook live feed at times. So, I mean, we couldn't have that. It just wasn't working. So we were just looking at different ideas. I had a group chat with a few friends of mine, and they were talking about dating and how Tinder had dried up and all of that kind of stuff. And it was about, they were just kind of chatting about how that was going to go. I mean, I'm married, so like I wasn't involved from that end, but I was like, is there something there? And then we started just spitballing names about what you would call a virtual dating show. And somebody said it was isolating dating. And then from that, just more spitballing ideas, and then Zoom to Groom. And honestly, from Zoom to Groom being mentioned, 15 minutes later, I had the event live on Facebook for going to take place that Saturday night. I had no real idea how it was going to work. Like, generally, not a clue. I hadn't really looked into the logistics of it, but the idea was, it was like, it caught me, and I was like, this is too good, and I think it will be that must watch TV. Yes, there's going to be car crash moments. Yes, there's a chance that some guy's going to come on his cock out, but that's the risk of it was a bit too mental to not do. And it was, no, there was no real thought of, nah, we want to do a dating show. It was just, we want to do something different that isn't just another quiz.
And I guess if you try it and, you know what, it doesn't work, it doesn't really fucking matter, does it? Like, it's a laugh. And yeah, it did work. But you know what I mean? Like, if it, when you're trying the first one, you can play around and, you know, like, ah, fuck, this might not work. You can, you know, be a bit self-deprecating with it. But if it picks up and it did, like, you're laughing.
Yeah, totally. I mean, as I say, we tried karaoke. Like, the karaoke was actually the first official event on this day and in. And it died in its ass because we couldn't get it to work. We just had people, they were singing a cappella, fucking My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion. And it was funny though. People just enjoyed the absolute car crash of it, but it wouldn't have hooked enough people in that way. So it was just about coming up with different ideas. But then we done it, and just people fell in love immediately. And I don't mean literally fell in love, but they enjoyed the show.
Has anyone actually like become a couple properly out of it? Do you know, or is it just?
Not that I'm aware of. I know of at least two people who have been on a socially distanced date from it.
Oh, throw the names out, mate.
I can't do that. I was told them in confidence. I was told them in confidence. I don't want to do it just yet. And I've got a season two to think about, so I can't be throwing out this kind of gold material at ease.
Right, well, tell us about season two then.
Yeah, we had Hannah on a couple of weeks ago.
I listened to Hannah's episodes. Hannah got in touch when the kind of second last episode, because that was when I said, I was like, you know what, I'm going to bring this to a close. And in all honesty, I was just going to bring it to a close because I didn't want it to get tired. I didn't want it to get to the stage where only 30 people were tuning in and people were really bored of it. And I knew if I was going to continue, it needed a refresh, and I didn't have the time to give it a refresh, all the know-how. And then Hannah got in touch and she was like, this is brilliant. Like, this is such a good concept. With a few wee tweaks, it could be amazing. So yeah, we've been talking a lot, been looking at like art direction, a bit of production value added to it, and even sponsorship, about how we can make it a little bit slicker, and have a little bit, still have that kind of random aspect that makes it beautiful, but you have absolutely no idea who's going to come on screen next, but having a little bit more structure so that the episodes aren't 2.5 hours long, which is what they were turning out to be, maybe just an hour long, and it flows nicely. So yeah, I mean, but again, that might not work. So
I think what we discussed is, when Hannah was on, obviously, you need that live chat element. I think there's two versions of it. There's the version that people watch, but there's a community that exists whilst it's on. So yeah, they feel like they're a part of it, where it's getting shout outs or getting likes on comments. You know, you almost overnight felt you had a successful time. Have you got 20 likes on one of your comments? You're like, yes, achieve something tonight. So,
and that's like, we looked at things like, do we bring in like a poll system? So like, say we've got 6 people on dates, and we're like, right, who, let's put up a poll, who's the winners, or who's on the final date, and we're looking at different things like that to kind of change up the whole way it works. I'm still working on that, but it will be back, and we'll be back very soon.
It was that kind of the unexpected element that was, I think, the most fun aspect watching, and fucking, I suppose, taking part as well, because there was the one where that guy said, "Daddy like that," and the aftermath of that, like, that created like this sort of little meme within the community, and everyone, the jaws dropped to the floor as this guy fucking said, "Daddy like that," to this girl. And then you and I bonded. You and I had like a fucking 10-minute date just talking about how awful that guy was. And but that kind of set, it almost formed into like a catchphrase for the following weeks. And
yeah,
that's supposed to be something that happens on like a TV show, like a proper TV show. And it was just, it's all been so organic and just flowed so beautifully. It's been a good thing.
So for people that haven't seen it, can you give me some context? Like, what did she say and what did he say, "Daddy likey," to? Like, it sounds like he mentally opened with "Daddy likey."
So like, he came on, there was a few niceties, introductions, the name, he was an electrician. And she said a few words, but not much, but enough for him to say, "What was that? Is that an Irish accent?" And she went, "Yeah, Northern Ireland." And he went, he started to say, he said it twice, because he was like, "Daddy like that, daddy really like that." So some of lines, but it was just one of those times. And I'm not on screen at this time where it's being broadcast, but I'm sitting here and I'm like, oh shit, what do? I pull him off, because that's awful. It was like such bad chat, but I was like, she's handling it well, and it's car crash. Like, it was that thing that really drew people to it. But the other thing was, she'd just been on a date prior to that, which was also awful, but people have forgotten that completely because that was so awful.
Just Shane as well, just to give you extra assurance, that guy was Australian.
Yes, yeah.
Nah, you never invite the Australians on. They were, like, weirdly though, a lot of my, like, because I'm from New Zealand, the part of like Aussies in Glasgow and Kiwis in Edinburgh, and they're all kind of almost interlinked, and a lot of people were sharing it on there. So I actually thought it was like some mad Australian thing that they'd set up, because like everyone, like heaps of Australians just add you as a friend when they get here, and they were all sharing it and stuff. And I was like, I never really even looked into it, just because I was doing shit. But yeah, like, I thought, until Danny and James were talking about it and Danny was on, I thought it was like some mad Australian thing.
Nah, I mean, I think that we must have had about 30-40% of Australians were the ones that made up of it. And then we had a whole bunch of Canadians as well. It was weird, because especially like the Canadians, they were sitting at like 4 p.m. having dates with all these pished Glaswegians.
North Americans just have this confidence, don't they? That they're all, we need to be fucking like down in Mad Dog before we jump on it, other than Danny, who did it completely sober for some weird reason. I say that with all the love in the world, mate. And the fact that I couldn't do it, fuck it, it took me getting drunk to even watch it. What I was going to ask you, mate, is you're putting all these events on every single night, the quizzes for the beats in, and just quizzes for people. I'd imagine it's quite entertaining pulling it all together, but does your wife Because you mentioned you're married. Does your wife not say, "Money fuck"? Get a rest, man. Come and help with the weans.
It's kind of mad because, like, when we got together, like, I was touring. I've always been busy. I've always worked loads. So as I say, this summer was meant to be my busiest summer. So from the, I'm looking at my big calendar here, from the 16th of May, I would pretty much have been on site at a festival or a stadium gig until the 22nd of August. So, I mean, if anything, she's won a watch, the fact that I'm over there. But I have pulled it back a wee bit, and I'm kind of only doing every second night at the moment. But that's more that I don't want people to get bored with everything we do. Plus, fuck, I've done a quiz on fucking everything.
I was going to say, there's like a break. The last few that I've watched, it's like we've almost found your breaking point of just frustrations with people.
People are just fucking idiots, though.
People are they're arseholes, mate.
Oh, that's just it. In general, man, it's unbelievable.
I thought we were watching the Name That Tune quiz last Saturday night, and there was a moment where everybody got kicked out of Kahoot just at the exact same time, and I was sitting there and I just started pissing myself. I was like, fuck it, we'll just keep going anyway. And then everybody that was moaning, you just said, nah, fuck it. I mean, I'm doing this for nothing anyway. You can get a refund for your ticket if you want.
it's just mental. It's like,
that's the attitude you want, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, but the thing is, I get like DMs, like actual angry DMs. People have taken time out to write a long paragraph of why they're annoyed and why they're angry. And I'm just like, you have invested fuck all in this. You were in like fucking 400th place when it shat the bed anyway. Like, you won't even win. You only win a shitey t-shirt even if you did win, that's it. I know, Dan, I've not posted yours, the only that I just...
All right. You made a very valid point on one of the quizzes when somebody else was saying the reduced stuff and you went, mate, there's a pandemic on right now. Like, I'm not rushing out to the post office. At that point, I was like, aye, fair. It's a very valid point.
What you do, mate, is you just need to leave them socially distanced in parks all around Glasgow. Just
They'll folk where to pick them up.
Aye, dead drops.
What is it? So, do you work for DF then, Andy, or do you just work in the music industry?
Oh, so I run my own business. I'm self-employed. My company's called BH Events. So I've got kind of three main contracts that I do. Two town centres, so Barrhead and Clarkston in East Renfrewshire. So I kind of run their town centre events and do a lot of business support stuff like throughout the time. So a lot of my work just now is actually on helping small businesses get prepared for opening back up again. Everything from producing social distancing stickers that you see on the floor to helping them with their marketing and all that kind of stuff. But then my other main contract is working for DF. So I'm like project manager for, I was meant to project manage every stadium show we had on this summer, as well as Edinburgh Summer Sessions, which is Princes Street Gardens. So yeah, obviously that's died in its ass.
This must be a gutter, mate. So you got any mental stories from these gigs? You know, you must have done Transmit, Tina Park, all the summer sessions.
Well, I was a tour manager for about 6-7 years as well. The main band that I toured with was Twin Atlantic. So we did most of Europe and all 48 of America's states. So yeah, I mean, I was there with them for a long time. It's not as cool as it's made out to be. You're getting up early in the morning to load loads of fucking flight cases into a venue, and then you're finishing late at night to load those same flight cases back into the trailer you just loaded them out of. But I mean, it was good fun.
Like, it's getting inspirational here for anybody that's listening and wants to get in this music industry.
The less people I can get into this industry, the better, because that means there's more work for the rest of us that are here.
Also, you know, like when like you hear about, like, I don't know, fucking these mad bands that tour, like U2 each year and all those kinds that are just touring 24/7. So you would have been on that kind of vibe. Like, when you go to a place, do you get to check it out, or like, do you get like, you know, because you're saying like up early, loading in, do you then get like 12 hours of weird time during the day where you can fuck around and check stuff out, or are you just like proper stressing about the gig and stuff?
Most of the time, no, you don't have time to check in out. Like, usually we'd maybe do three gigs on and then have at least one day off, and those days off are usually well planned around some decent big cities, or you make sure that your travel takes you to a big city. So I mean, I would always have had lots of time off in London, Manchester, we would always take time off, and then New York, LA, San Francisco, stuff like that. Places where there's actually shit to do. So, yeah, there's times where you get days off, and you make sure you make use of those. You kind of have to, because you're living in everyone's pocket. I mean, living on a tour bus is fucking brutal. Like, literally, like, you take a small flat and say, right, you're going to live with 14 other guys in this small flat. You're like, what?
Fucking hell.
Yeah, it's mad. So, I mean, you're getting up in the morning, you're having to work with these guys, and then you've got to go to bed 3 foot away from them. So, but I mean, they're all good friends. I mean, every single one of them, I still class a good friend. They were all in my wedding. So, yeah, it becomes more of a family than a job. But I mean, I have toured with other people who I didn't get as close with and stuff like that. Like, I toured with Major Lazer, which is the DJ Diplo's kind of...
Yeah, their big tunes Lean On, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they've had loads of big tunes, and Diplo fucking produced, like, Beyonce's albums and stuff like that. So, I mean, like, massive, massive star. And that was, like, a party 24-7. And I'm not like, big into that. It was a bit of a different vibe. But, I mean, they would do a gig, and then they'd go and do a DJ set, and then you'd be like, we've got fucking 3 hours before we need to load into the next venue. Which is 2.5 hours drive away, so it was a bit mad.
I work in radio, mate, and I'm hearing, like, you're speaking to me a wee bit. It's whenever you get a big guest coming in, and we get it less and less in Scotland now coming at the stations, but whenever we got a big guest coming in and somebody in the office said, oh, I'm really excited, Riora's coming in today, I'm like, do you know how much work I need to go through? You know, I need to make sure that she's got exactly what she needs. We get exactly what we want out of it. Everything's filmed, and then we get her out, just all the logistical parts of it. And I just think like that, rather than having this like superstar in front of you.
And the tour manager and her end is like, fuck's sake, I thought the fucking day off, and now I need to take her into this studio for a half hour interview.
Yeah,
that's exactly what's going on at that end as well.
And they sometimes you're lucky if you get a decent fucking tour manager that you talk to, yeah, and they smile at you. You're like, ah, yeah. Jesus, it's going to be nice.
That's because he's pissed off because you've ruined his day off, though.
Fuck him. I started a new job, and I was talking to an engineer yesterday. See if you can story top this one, because this guy loves a name drop story. And he comes out of nowhere. You could just be talking about something. And he was like, yeah, so when I was in LA, and you know, we were at Daryl's house, and I'm like, and he was like, Daryl Hannah. And I'm like, where the fuck did I know Daryl Hannah from? I'm like, Splash. From the 80s.
Kill Bill.
Yeah. And I said, he was like, I was like, how the fuck do you know her? Because he toured all over the world with bands as well. He was a techie. And he was like, oh, yeah, we just got to know him when we were over in the LA. And then we went and, you know, had dinner at our house. I'm like, fucking hell, man. And he was like, yeah. And then there's these two guys at the back, and I got talking to them and asked them what they did, and it turned out one of them had invented snowboarding in the hills in LA. And I was just like, what the fuck is this? Like, firstly, you don't think anybody invented snowboarding, you know? It's one of those things that you just think that happened in existence. But it's the best story I've got out of them so far in 3 days. Can you top it in your tour life? Go, give us
not,
a few.
Not in my tour life, but I did speak to Bill Gates via satellite video call while standing on stage at a sold out Royal Albert Hall.
Right, give us more.
That would be a mental Major Lazer gig, that.
Well, why was he on stage then?
He wasn't on stage, he was on the big screen on a video call. Yeah. I was on stage.
Yeah, what was the reason?
I was in sixth year at school.
It's better.
I was naked. but it was the Institute of Directors, which is like a big organisation of all the directors of the biggest 500 biggest companies in, I don't know if it's the world or UK or Europe or whatever. And it was their annual general conference, and they picked 12 kids from schools all over the UK to put forward young people's views of business. So my task was to start it all off, and I entered from the back of the Royal Albert Hall with a ghetto blaster on my shoulder, dressed as Kevin from Kevin and Perry, with Garbage When I Grow Up blasting out there.
Oh, what a fucking tune, by the way. Absolute tune.
So I swaggered through the crowd, like, winking at all these women in the crowd. No, there wasn't many of them because it was Institute of Directors AGM. Probably some mistresses in there, but get up on stage, sit on this big inflatable, because this was the 90s, so I sat on an inflatable couch and, like, this fake remote control, flicked it over to Bill Gates on the screen, and then I was to ask him some questions about business. I can't remember a single question I asked him.
I don't think I'd be able to come up with questions for Bill Gates. You'd feel like any question that you have, like, the standards are, like, 1 out of 100 for him.
I was 16 as well, so, I mean, I had no interest.
How, like, so you said 12 pupils? Was it 12? How the fuck did you get chosen? Were you, like, a prodigy or something, mate?
No, I was a wee arsehole in school.
What school did you go to?
Paisley Grammar.
Paisley, I don't know much about Paisley.
But it has the word grammar in it, but it also has the word Paisley in it.
So. Yes, an oxymoron and a half.
Yeah.
but that's weird. 12 out of the full UK?
Yeah, yeah.
What was the requirements? I'm probably digging too deep into this, but
I remember them coming to your school.
You can't do it, James. You're too old, man.
No, but I know you're having techie problems, James, but Bill Gates isn't going to sort your fucking microphone out.
Do I sound good? No, genuinely, did you have to write an essay, shoot a video or something?
They came to your school and we had like a day in a classroom where they picked 30 of us from the school to go into this classroom and fuck about with these casting people. And then they phoned me, they phoned my mum like a few days later and says, can Andrew come down to London? Because we all got flown down to London in fact, we got flown down to London for 2 days, back home, and then flew down again for the actual event. It was mad. I mean,
Andy, you got put on the casting couch at 16, mate.
I'm thinking, now that I'm reading this out, I'm like, that was a paedophile ring. That was 100% paedophile ring.
You also met Prince Andrew, but you've just fucking blanked that completely out of your memory.
Repressed it.
Mate, you said something else in one of these Zoom calls that I thought was pretty fucking cool. You got married at the Barrowlands.
Yes.
How does somebody get married at the Barrowlands? So you don't just phone the Barrowlands up and say, listen, are you free Saturday at 17 for me?
Actually. So, so me and my, like, I proposed only 1st of January last year. Start of January. The whole thing, we've been together for 10 years, 3 kids under 6. We only get married in September, and it was kind of a running joke that we were never going to get married, because I was like, if I had 10 grand, the last thing I'm spending it on is a fucking wedding. But I was like, okay, let's get this done now.
And did you do it for you, or did you do it for her?
For get to get married.
Aye.
It was probably either get married or have another child.
Right, so
I needed a break.
Yeah.
I needed a break, but I mean, she is 6 months pregnant right now, so I fucked it either way.
I like
congratulations.
Romantically, you were like, shit, let's get this done. it's the stuff that every girl wants to hear, I guess.
Yeah. But anyway, so we were looking at like all these hotels and looking at all these wedding deals and all that. And I'm like, this is pish. Like, the last thing I want to do is to go and get married in a hotel that means nothing to either of us. We'll try to pick something out of just pure ease rather than something that we want. And then she actually suggested the Barrowlands. I love the Barrowlands. I've done hundreds of shows in the Barrowlands. It holds a special place in any Glaswegian's heart, I'm sure. So I was like, okay, I'll phone them. So I phoned them, and I was like, what do I do this? And I never got a reply for ages. And then Tom, who's the manager of the bar, is really old guy, Tom, love him to bits. Turns out he was on holiday. So I waited for weeks, phoned back hundreds of times. He's like, I'll get back to you. I was like, oh, cool, fuck this. He's not going to do it. He's just trying to let me down gently. And then I'm in Sainsbury's at Darnley, just on my way home from work, walking down the fucking aisle. My phone goes, and I didn't recognise the number. And I answered it. He's like, Andy, it's Tom from the bar. I was like, oh, how you doing? I'm on my own in Sainsbury's. And he's like, Andy, your bar is family. So yeah, the date's free, the date's yours, no charge. And I'm like, what? I'm like in my head, I'd already had a figure about how much this was going to cost me to book the bars for my wedding. And I'm like, I was speechless for ages. I was emotional. And I was like, I don't know what to say. And he's like, I know, Charles, that's fine. Just you just need to sort everything else out. I mean, there's nothing in the bars. It's an empty venue. So there's a lot of things to be putting in there. But that was it. That literally was that. You just phone them up and ask them if you can marry in the Barrowlands. They don't do weddings as a rule. There's like nobody. You don't get married in the Barrowlands. There's only been a handful of them have happened, and there's got to be a connection there. They will do it for people that they know. But there's only been four or five.
Was there a specific gig? Like, was there a specific gig you and your wife went to that was like the reason that you wanted there, or?
Nah, I mean, so we got married in Glasgow University Chapel. So that was kind of like her side of it. She went to uni.
It's a weird setup there, isn't it? Because everybody's like sideways with the way you sit and you look. Yeah, it's not that way.
Yeah. But that was kind of her side, and then the bar was my side. Although when I was tour managing Twin, we played it 6 times, I think. And it was the first time she was pregnant with her first child. She came along and she was sitting on the dance floor of the bar, sewing up the stage skirts for us. So, I mean, there was definite connections for us all. But, I mean, I think we'd been there to see Paolo Nutini, Frightened Rabbit. Probably the best gigs I've ever seen in my life of being in the bar is Arcade Fire. It was important that it was somewhere cool, somewhere different. And it worked. It was class. Like, it was amazing.
I think there's probably a lot of people out there that feel the exact same. I mean, what jumps out to me, plenty of Frank Turners, Frank Rabbit when Indy was big in 2006, you know, the twang. I remember the twang and Little Man Tate in a gig there. It was just pure energy, non-stop. It's probably my favourite venue in Glasgow.
I mean, I'd go as far as saying the world, and I've done a lot of venues. I've done some amazing venues, and that I don't think it can be beaten.
I always enjoyed watching. I remember seeing Nick Cave in the Bad Seeds there, and Nick Cave was like, oh, the Glasgow Barrowlands. So like, of all the venues I've played in, and you could feel like the crowd like doing that whole, oh, here we go, here comes like the pop, and he's like, this is one of them. and it was just kind of like this laughter, and then like, oh, he didn't say the thing that everyone's supposed to say. But I will say LCD Sound System's the best gig I've ever been at the Barrows.
So I mean, I've done loads. Like, so when I work for DF, I'll do like, I'll be the DF representative at a gig. So I've done a lot of shows in the Barrows for bands that I don't know or don't like. And I remember doing the Stranglers there a couple of years ago. I still don't know the Stranglers. I mean, I know Golden Brown, and that's probably it. I remember going up there's a wee set of stairs that take you up just to the edge of the back stairs and just looking out, and I was like, people were like dying in love with what was going on. There was just this mad energy in the building, and I was like, I don't even know this song, I don't know this band, but it was just, there was something deep rooted in it that was just so class and amazing. And to now be able to say, yeah, I got married in there is unbelievable.
Did you have any bands play?
We had like a wedding band, a covers band, who played. There was nothing kind of mad about it. I did have a pub quiz at it though.
Fucking typical, mate. We're finding out so much about you.
I done the Zoom to Groom that was on after as well.
No, there was that weird shite bit in between the reception and the actual, in between the ceremony and the reception, where everybody's like, this is shite, while everybody's away getting photos taken. I had somebody host a pub quiz in the bar downstairs, so that nobody was bored.
That's a good thing about the Barrows as well, and the wedding in between bit is shite, worst experience ever. And you don't want to get too drunk because you don't want to make an ass of yourself. But the Barrows upstairs, if you go to the furthest away bar, you never wait a long time there. You're always served quite quickly, man. And I think that's what makes it a brilliant venue too.
Yeah.
I think the bounce.
Oh, the Sprung like, dance floor is fucking... Mm. There's a certain part of it backstage where you can see underneath it, and it's class.
The first thing you get caught up in it, you do think, well, you're enjoying it, but you're also thinking, oh, this is going to collapse and we're all going to die. And then but then you get used to it and you get into it.
It's one of those places that has its own set of laws, it has its own set of rules. Like, if that was a venue that somebody was to try and open today, the council would be like, no, you can't open this. Like, that's not safe. That's not safe. Like, there's so many mad things about it that are just, like, so sketchy. But if you change them, you'd ruin the whole thing. And the like bands coming in, they'll always talk about the crew, because the crew are fucking mental. You would not mess with the guys that are lifting the cases up the stairs, but they're one of the best parts about it. And they when I had my wedding in there, they still like, nah, this is on us, a wedding present for you, and just fucking loaded in all the gear that was still to come in. So I can't say enough about the place.
That's it. So now that we've had you on a podcast, mate, what can you get us for free? Likewise. So I left Capital FM not that long ago. I'm now in a new station, but we used to get free gigs at the Hydro all the time. And I need a new contact, you know.
Usually the first question after I get introduced to somebody is, oh, can you get me free tickets then? So maybe you need to get me on at least an hour once before we get free tickets.
There's
not
a lot of gigs going on, eh?
Yeah. I'll sacrifice my T-shirt.
You not getting a bottle of Grey Goose as well?
I need...
It's already, the bottle's already smashed. It's,
just so you know, it is actually packaged up and ready to go. Right. I was just waiting on the T-shirt.
I didn't bring it up, by the way, just so...
Just... You're not even going to tell me you don't even like vodka as well, are you, Danny?
I haven't drank alcohol for 3 months. It can wait.
Because I said I would send it, but then it was, James replied saying, ah, fuck him, he's not drank in ages. So I was like, right, I'll wait until the T-shirts arrive.
I've never drank Grey Goose in my life. Folk make it sound like it's vodka that you can drink, like fucking juice.
No.
Are you getting them sent to you, mate, or are you just being generous? Like, well, fuck it, I'm not making any money, so I'll spend it on other people.
I've done a few quizzes for Bacardi, like for their staff. Mm-hmm. So they sent me a good chunk of stuff, but there is a lot of stuff, like a lot of prizes I've just put up myself. Like, I'm not making any money from this. Like, there's no ad revenue. I don't have a sponsor. It's just keeping me sane and keeping me busy. So as long as people are enjoying it and having fun, then I have thrown a few things at it.
Yeah. The thing is as well, it's not ending anytime soon. All right, yeah. We're in phase one of four phases, but you're looking at least another 8 or 9 weeks of this being normal. So
yeah, I mean, and as I say, like my stuff's gigs. Like gigs aren't going to be back until phase 7, which not even a phase 5. So
There was one I mentioned, Little Man Titty there, and they were a band from Sheffield that like disbanded in what 2009 or 2010. I actually went to the last gig in the O2 Academy Sheffield and it was amazing. But on the week of lockdown, they decided to do an announcement saying we're returning and we're going to play a live gig in 6 months. And I just thought, you're a fucking idiots, man. Like, you could have waited until there was a buzz for live music coming back. It sucked me in and I was so close to buying tickets. But at the moment, they still think they're playing a gig in September in Sheffield.
No chance. Absolutely no chance of that. Unless they've only sold 30 tickets and then maybe they will.
I think they've sold it out.
Because I used to be the venue manager in the QMU in Glasgow. I remember him, Little Man Tate, in there for a gig. I was an Arctic Monkeys fan when they first came out, so it was something that I was kind of keeping a close eye on, but I never really got into it.
They weren't the best lyrically, you know, and I think it was just one thing that caught fire with me and my mates. They had a song called House Party at Boovies, and it was kind of full of energy. We were all just partying loads at the time and we sung it to each other, so kind of felt a close connection. But they didn't have the lyrical resonance or sound that Arctic had, or even Melbourne, you know. So they were kind of third tier, but they were a fun band to go and watch and see live.
You sold them as well as I sold our podcast earlier, James. Third tier.
These guys.
They're the Albion Rovers of fucking the noughties indie bands.
From Sheffield. So you were saying there's obviously a mad community behind it and lots of people are loving what you're doing, man. Like, are you looking to monetize it? Like, I know there's that whole thought that don't fuck it, it's a nice thing, it's organic, it's doing what it's doing. But if you've been out of work and you are, you know, you're putting your own money into prizes and you're putting a lot of like heart and soul into it.
You've got a pregnant missus as well.
Yeah, you're right. I'm speaking for her. But like, is there a way of monetizing it? Is there a way of monetizing it so you kind of doesn't lose what it is, but you know, you get a wee bit of money for chucking hours and hours of your life into it?
Possibly, but in all honesty, it's not. I mean, like, I think Facebook will automatically monetize the page once it hits 10,000 likes. So at the moment it's 8,900 likes, but there's over 10,000 followers. So once it hits that, Facebook will automatically monetize it. But I mean, there's pennies in it. It's not something bold. I'm lucky, like, although I've lost all the gigs side of my work, I'm still working, like, I'm still earning. So I'm not too bothered about that. I'm happy just to continue. And I think, to be honest, part of that is because of the effect that it's having on people. And, like, I've jumped on a few of the community Zoom calls that they've had and genuinely seeing that there's people there that would be like, they'd be sitting at home with nothing else to do. And they're now making friends and they're having these conversations every night. The community is more than what I'd ever really thought any of this would have been. So no, monetizing it is certainly not something that is high on the agenda. Don't get me wrong, if somebody's going to throw money at me and say, I want to buy this off you, or I want to do this with it, then yeah, I'll consider it. Or if it gets to a stage where I'm like going to be stupidly out of pocket for something, then I will look at it. But there's always that thing with monetizing something, or like people have always said, why don't you charge an entry and give away a bigger prize? Then I can't fuck it up. As soon as somebody's paying me for it, I can't make an ass of it. And I've made an ass of a lot of the quizzes that we've done. Even last night, like with a Name That Tune quiz last night, and I put the wrong answer in for one of them. If somebody had paid for that, then I'm fucking out of shit. It's just not
compliance comes in. Well, let me ask you this then. Fast forward 6 months, clubs start opening. I mean, January next year. Are you going to maybe do a staying in, staying out night somewhere?
Yep. Well, it's already in plans. Looking like we'll hopefully do something in SWG3.
Now, is it going to be as cheesy as some of the like Saturday night sessions have been? Because SWG3 instantaneously screams out cool venue, cool bands that go there.
But then they also host Bongo's Bingo.
Bingo, yeah.
True. I mean, so yeah, it'll be what we is. I mean, it'll be me fucking try to rip the cunt out of folk as they make an ass of it. So yeah, it's not going to change what it is. It will just continue to be, it'll be a more generic pub quiz, being that we will be in a pub format. It's not like you're going to see a Marvel quiz or something like that there. But yeah, we will definitely be doing something live, whether it's going to be regular, whether it's going to be a one-off, whether we'll do a few for charity, I don't really know. We were kind of hoping that we'd maybe be thinking August time, but already that's probably going to be pushed ahead. But we're lucky, SWG3 is a great venue for it, loads of space. That they could still open as a much smaller capacity than what the room actually is. But the other thing's got to come with that is my job's starting to step up a wee bit. We're already starting to look at other events we can host. Somebody's asked me to project manage some drive-in events and stuff like that. So yeah, I need to kind of weigh my options up and see what's going to work.
Do you think all the venues are going to get through this thing? Because I know there's a lot of talk about like certain venues maybe needing X amount to get by and all that, but I'd imagine it's going to be a case that as soon as we can get out and go to these things again, folk will be itching to get out and do it.
Yeah, I won't talk about venues directly, but I would say businesses in general. There are some businesses that will survive, that want to survive. Some of them are diversifying. Some of them are doing something different. Some of them are just keeping active and making sure that people are known they still exist, so that when something does change, they remember those people. And then there's some businesses that are just sitting on their hands waiting until they can open their doors again, whether that be a fucking beauty salon or a venue. And yes, some of them won't survive. Some people need to realise, no, the world has changed, everything is changing around us, and you need to change with it or you're going to be very left behind. Although there's a lot of people who have fallen through the cracks with kind of government support and stuff like that, the support that's out there is actually really, really good. Like, I can't really fault the financial support that a lot of businesses have been given. Me personally, I fall through the cracks. I have had zero support from the government or any of the schemes that they've put out, because I have my own company and I'm a self-employed director. So I'm not saying that because somebody's gave me 10 grand in my back pocket. I'm saying that because I genuinely believe it. So if businesses have been smart about it and have used this time wisely, then yeah, I think they'll be okay. But there are some there that are, I don't know, some people there who are just built to complain and are just going to complain about what a shit show it is. Yes, it's a shit show. We're all in the same shit show. Like, just you need to think about the bigger picture.
Boggles my mind that someone like CPL haven't came along and went, right, Andy, can we take this? We're not there every single weekend. We can try and integrate what you've got, and they could maybe get the sponsors on board or have like an entry fee like you're talking about, under the proviso that they, you know, you can still kind of fuck up the quiz if you want. But so they can do it more consistently on a bigger scale, and then that keeps them front of mind. They probably got loads of money in the bank, but it keeps their audience entertained and still associated with their clubs.
Definitely still, they've definitely got our money for the live show. They definitely didn't forget to ask for that.
Don't say that on that podcast.
When I do a lot of work for DF concerts, it's going to be very, it's unlikely that I'm going to go and work for another promoter.
I've got no, but even someone offering you, saying, right, can we buy this off you, like you said, it just boggles my mind that you've got these nightclub groups that could be putting on like Cat House Fridays, like you, the way you DJed last Saturday night, just somebody DJing in that setting and then bringing that audience, you know, because people fucking lap it up. Somebody doing the work for them, because you nick me at the moment, you're having to put on tunes yourself, which is fun, but it becomes tiresome, so you get fatigue with everything that you're doing. Give someone else control when you enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, like Liquid Rooms in Edinburgh have been doing it. You bet, where they're sticking a DJ on and in the club and stuff like that. And some of the stuff that we're looking at is like putting on gigs like in actual venues and then streaming them. But I mean, the thing with this is all of that costs money, so you're going to need to monetize it in a way, and people aren't yet prepared to pay to watch a gig on Facebook, because they're like, well, wait a minute, this guy's doing it for free on his Instagram, or this band have done it for free on YouTube. So like there's that thing about people's mindsets about what should and shouldn't I pay for. All of these things cost money, so yeah. I mean, on you go. Sorry.
Do you think, because like I've been keeping an eye on that, and like most big bands, like a lot of big acts over the last 2 or 3 months have been doing live streams every week or every couple of weeks, and they've been doing so much free shit. Do you think that bites the industry in the ass a wee bit?
Maybe not the whole industry, but it certainly bites the artists in the ass, because the second that they're like, shit, we're in this for a year, and they say, all right, can you pay a fiver for this gig now? People are like, nah, I'm just going to watch the one you did last week. Like, you've cheapened your product by doing that. So there are some artists out there that I've spoken to that haven't done any of those things. They haven't done, or they've maybe done one for a charity or something like that, but they haven't cheapened their product by doing these live streams to keep their pages active. They've maybe done something differently. They've maybe done a podcast, but they've not sold what is their USP, which is their music. They've not sold that off. The industry as a whole, no, but probably each individual band and the brand that they have, then yes. I think Biffy Clyro would be the one that would jump to mind. Like, they've done weekly live gigs on Instagram, but I just don't know. I mean, if you're a Biffy Clyro fan, somebody said, all right, we're going to do the same again, but it's going to cost you £5, but why? Didn't cost me £5 last week. Yeah. So I think that'd be a real struggle.
So if you could reset the whole scenario, you would then look at that, but you can't do it once it's, the horse is bolted kind of thing.
Yeah, nobody thought we were going to be in lockdown for this long, so...
You wonder if people have been doing a lot of the stuff for charity and all that as well, and then they're starting to realise that maybe they need to look at their own charity as much as anything. Because like street rave stuff's been amazing, and you donate to that, and they raise loads of money for PPE. And even like what you're doing, like the beats and things, fucking class. That's what, nearly 10 grand you've raised from that.
Yeah, I mean, because we did for the Gigs in Scotland one, we raised money at the start of that. So, I mean, we're over 50 grand now on what we've raised for various charities. So, I mean, it's been great. But there are people out there that have just given that away and not even used it for that good. So I think there could be people that need to think differently now. But it's all going to change.
That's it. This podcast is now going to start costing £20 per episode as of next week.
Value for money, of course.
Yeah.
Well, we were talking about having an OnlyFans page as a joke for about 6 months, and then like we were in the park yesterday having a pint, and James was like, "Fuck, we can't do the." We always joke, or James always joked, that we'd sit in the bathtub covered in baked beans together for like lights. You could pay to see that, and he was like, "Oh, fuck. We can't do that baked bean bath thing." And I was like, "What? Were you genuinely the whole time just waiting for the right price of beans or something?"
Mate, why do you think I've been stacking up on beans? This was nothing to do with the fucking pandemic.
Yeah, you were like mad panic buying beans for years.
Yeah. Do you want to ask your mother a question, mate, before we let Andy go?
Yeah, if you were going to murder someone and get away with it, how would you do it? So maybe you had a week to plan it. What's the best way to murder someone and get away with it?
Who am I murdering?
You decide.
Up to you, man.
Right, so I mean, that would make a difference to my answer. Because if it was just a random, I didn't know them, then I'd probably do it quick. I'd probably be really meticulous about it and cause some real suffering and pain.
Right, this is where we really get to know someone.
No, I'm in. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, like, fuck it. If I'm getting away with it, then I'm going to choose someone who deserves this.
Well, you need to get. Do you need to tell us how you would get away with it?
Well, no, that would. Fuck it. Oh, I need to tell you how I'm going to get away with it.
Yeah, because we're assuming, Andy, that you're never actually going to murder someone, mate. So it's all speculation.
Oh.
Yeah, so how would you commit the murder, and then how would you get away with it?
Right, okay.
We like to think that we're big in the serial killer world, and they all get, like, you know...
Yeah, everyone listens to true crime podcasts, so this is us trying to get into that market.
Right, so what I would do is I would pre-record a quiz, and then I'd present it as live. So there's my alibi straight away. And I'd also have a bot, which is firing in comments into the comment section, which I'm replying to, which is then like feeling the file, but I'm definitely live.
That's just smart.
Yeah. Then I think it'd need to be a random person I'm killing here, because if I'm premeditated, I'm leaving too many tracks here.
So if you were going to kill a random person, what type of random person would you go for? Because we've all got a type.
I'd need to choose somebody easy. I think it would just need to be someone who I could like overpower.
We're all thinking an old granny. Did you just say a small child? I went an old granny, you went a small child.
Well, I don't, what's worse?
Both are fine. Both are perfectly fine to kill.
Right.
It would just be an opportune thing, like maybe a pissed guy. A pissed guy who's fighting with something in the street, like just pissed guy walking alone. I'm like, right, let's get this guy, just drag him away somewhere, and do it quickly. And it'd need to go in the water somewhere, like a really remote. There's so many remote places in Scotland. I mean, I live in East Ayrshire, and like it's fairly remote. It's a small village, but I mean, I drive through fields and shit like that all the time. Like, so there's a water somewhere that nobody's ever going to find that. certainly long enough for it all decompose and get rid of all the evidence.
What I'm getting here is whilst you've been driving to Glasgow along these roads, you've thought about this before. You're like, there must be a wee reservoir or something that's disused now.
If not, just put them in Kilmarnock and nobody would notice the difference.
it's definitely one of those ones. You're driving along the street and driving along these fields and stuff, and you're like, I catastrophize things and I look at other shit that could happen. But like, what happened if that tree fell down? What happened if that car there just swerved into the front of me?
You drive into town, you'll drive in over the Kingston Bridge for the M77. Yep. See, when you're stuck in traffic in that Kingston Bridge, do you always just think about it just collapsing?
Oh, yeah, oh, definitely.
Yeah, that's what I do when I sit in Kingston Bridge. I always say that if I was going to be a terrorist, I would blow up the Kingston Bridge.
Can I return your question with another question then, which is one that I'd like to debate? So how many five-year-olds do you think you could fight? Now, I'm going to give you some context to this. You're in a basketball court-sized room,
right?
And they've all been given one day's training of hand-to-hand combat and teamwork.
Are they smart? Or the idiots, because you could give a kid 10 weeks training and they wouldn't.
You've got a mix in there. But they have been given a day's training of hand to hand combat and teamwork. How many do you think you take before they overpowered you?
I used to be Spider-Man at kids' birthday parties for about a year. And little boys, right, little dudes, girls were cool, they didn't care. They're like, oh, Spider-Man, awesome. Little boys, after about 5 minutes, would be like, punch him in the dick. Honestly, like it would genuinely happen every time. And they'd all go, yay! And the parents were off doing whatever the fuck the parents do, probably just like talking shit to Suzanne or something. So all of a sudden there's like 13 little cunts just trying to like hit you in the balls, and you're trying to be a fun, jovial Spider-Man and avoid your balls getting hit and stop them punching you, and you're having to like, when they go to punch you, you catch their hand and spin them around and stuff. I reckon if you were like, if there were no parents around and you were allowed to fight back properly, 50.
Whoa, that's a big number.
That's a Spider-Man number.
That's a Shane number, aye.
I'm still going to think about it, but can I just be the one in the room that's the adult and say this is a horrible thought concept? Like, I know murdering people and hitting a wee granny and all that was that too, but I'm just thinking, because all I'm thinking about is how many could I punt in the head in a row? Because they're quite small.
Use the first one as a weapon.
That's what I was thinking. you pick one up and fucking launch it.
I think the fear would kick into the other ones. As soon as they saw this other little kid being used as a bat, fear would kick into some of the other ones too.
My feeling would be that I would, if I'm on I know it's a basketball court sized room, but I'm now picturing a basketball court, I feel like I'd need to try and slam dunk one. And I think that would be my failing, and that I would be so preoccupied in trying to slam dunk a 5-year-old, because I'm shy at basketball, that the rest of them would nibble at my ankles sufficiently.
See, you guys are thinking about it all wrong, because Andy never said that you had to go in there and instantaneously fight these kids. You could go in, you could take a story time book, some music and shit, have them all fall asleep, and then you just ransack them.
Five-year-olds don't just fall asleep when you read them a book. Like, they've trained to fight.
let them run around and like pretend it's the second class. You can like manifest this whatever way you want, and then when they're down and they're tired, just bark.
So you're saying manipulate them mentally?
Yes, rather than just for the straight
psycho,
physical.
You're psycho for saying them. No, you're going to ruin them for life.
Either way, we'll get them. I mean, they're not going to have a life when I'm done with them.
I won't be offended if you cut this all out the podcast.
it's fine. We prefaced it by saying this is a horrible concept, but if you're making us think about it as an experiment, then that's what we would do.
Yeah.
Now it's all come back to me. That was actually the question that Andy asked Bill Gates at that conference.
I thought that's how he got the job in the first place. He just battled all those other 5-year-olds.
I can maybe talk the Bill Gates one as well. I was on Funhouse.
Fuck off. That's amazing.
What's Funhouse?
It's a whole lot of fun where there's prizes to be won.
And you actually get the prizes, not like Andy. tell us that. You and Pat Sharp and the twins.
That was it. They're not actually twins, by the way. They're just sisters.
Fuck's sake, man. Childhood ruined.
Like childhood ruined.
That and that guy that battered me when I was a 5-year-old.
Those 5-year-olds are the fucking lucky ones now that they'll never find out that.
Right.
Did you win? Do like the full thing with the go-karts and all that as well?
Yep. Aye.
Did you win and do the thing at the very end?
Won a set of skis.
Nice.
I mean, obviously that's what a guy for Paisley needs.
Did you apply, or did they? Was this just like the other one they came to you?
I mean, what fucking school did I go to? But they turned up at our school and took us all out in my classroom. Paedophile ring, definitely.
Because it was filmed in Glasgow, wasn't it?
It was filmed up at Cadens.
See, I didn't know.
Was it across the whole of the UK?
I don't actually know.
Oh no, it was. Funhouse, it was ITV.
Yeah, it was like a kids' game show, Shane, that has a bit of a cult following still, and the guy that presented it made. I don't know, he doesn't just now anyway, but he then proceeded to make a living off turning up at student unions and playing music for a few hours.
Yeah. No, Pat Sharp was a huge DJ in Capital in London for years as well. Like they did some damage as a presenter down there, like on radio, not just TV. So he's quite, you know, he's quite.
He definitely did do the student union
thing. Yeah.
Don't know how many times I turned that down.
We'll probably just wrap it up then. Andy, how long is the staying open then online?
Until I get too busy. If other work starts to take over and I can't do it anymore, then that'll be the way it goes. But it will stay open for as long as it needs to. As I say, as long as people still need a place to go and a place to get a wee bit of different entertainment that you're not getting on fucking BBC or ITV, then we'll be there, and we'll slowly disappear into the black hole that is the internet once everybody else finds normal again.
In 10 years' time, you'll probably just be able to see the back catalogue on YouTube.
Aye.
That's it. Yeah. Remember, we were part of this. That's how we met.
Either that or it'll be ex-staying in presenter Andy Dunlop has been convicted of killing 15 5-year-olds.
Still think 15 sounds ambitious.
I say go for 50 and die trying, you know?
Yeah. Listen, but this is we'd never do that in real life. Just, I have to say that.
I don't know.
No, you don't. It's the internet, man.
Just as you've said that, I can hear a child screaming downstairs. So, I mean, man, I don't know.
Your wife's been listening to you too long. Listen, mate, it's a great thing that you're doing. We will definitely be at the staying in, staying out night that happens at SWG3. I can't wait to meet some of the random people that have been involved in this. And just have a drink with yourself, some of that Grey Goose that Danny will probably get about then.
Aye, I'll bring it with me.
But thank you, man. Really appreciate it. And have a great night, buddy.
Thank you very much.
That was Drunk Therapy. If you enjoyed this podcast, go listen to some of the other ones. The old you would have. If you're on socials, like us there as well. Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @DrunkTherapy. It's something weird on Twitter, which I can't remember right now.